Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Fred Report Technical Market Call for August 27th, 2015. Obviously, we've had an eventful few days, and things look like they're settling down a little bit, and we'll get right into it, and we'll talk about some of the stocks and some of the things in the stock market. And the first thing is, what we're seeing in the past few days is, you know, obviously we saw a drop near my third target, and we're resolving, in fact, we have resolved now the oversold condition on a bunch of the oscillators and stuff that I use, you know, which is normal. And what we have to see going forward is, you know, how this market reacts to buy signals versus sell signals. Right now, the sell signals are certainly producing a little bit more. Remember that the internals forecast this move, and they should improve completely or improve before this move on the downside is completely over. We certainly see the possibility of a retest. Realize that the bad internals we saw 4 months ahead of this decline, we didn't see this in 98, we didn't see this in 2011, and those were definitely bull market corrections. This may ultimately be a bull market correction. There's really no way to know that, honestly. But when you see the bad internals, the bad transports and stuff before that, that's what you normally see in advance of bear markets. And because of that, we would say, you know, certainly be a little bit more circumspect about just throwing money at this thing. Obviously, there's some attractive things out there. You know, sentiment, you know, has jumped to 22 from 18. Normally, at the end of this sort of thing, it is at 30 or more. So sentiment needs to improve and improve for a while before we actually get a sentiment buy signal, which, you know, 10, 20 weeks of this would be ideal. I don't know whether we could handle it emotionally. So, you know, trade, invest in some stuff that you like, but we still think you should hold a little money out. We'll see if there's a retest. With these kind of internals and the momentum to the downside, you would normally settle back and have some sort of a retest in 5 to 10 weeks, just as we did in 2011. The question was asked, how do you know if you're going to have a V bottom or some sort of choppiness and retest? And again, the answer is there's no real way to know. That is actually, in some respects, a fundamental question. You know, for me, when I look at the technicals of this and I look at the fundamentals, I think that there's still better chance for retest. One of the questions we've also had, which we will talk about and actually talk about with Jeff Garbaz and also with clients on the phone, is this whole question of liquidity. A number of people have asked, golly, some of these ETFs have gone straight down on the open. Is that a problem with the ETF structure? Should we use these sorts of things going forward? And I'll tell you, my initial reaction is this, and it's not one that I want to put in print. It's one that I want people to consider, though. Over the past 4 years, what we have seen is a proliferation of the PIA or PIM or PDP type programs where advisors are becoming discretionary portfolio managers and are building portfolios using some of their firm's models. They're not building their own. They are using some of their firm's models. And what that means is, instead of a firm like Morgan Stanley having 15,000 brokers doing something different and doing something different for each client, you're getting a firm like Morgan Stanley that's using 3 models and everyone's doing exactly the same thing. If that's the case and everyone decides to sell, especially if everyone decides to sell and these things are in more than one firm, you're going to have no liquidity. There will be too many sellers regardless. Okay. So I don't blame the ETF structure as much as, or at least I think the blame should be shared with this whole idea of scalability and every client does exactly the same thing. And we abdicate some of our thinking and portfolio planning and give it to the firm rather than building it ourselves. I mean, I think that's a discussion we have to look at and every advisor should think about. As an example, I spoke to one of my consulting level clients who uses a particular ETF model, and also uses a particular stock model that his firm has suggested they use. And he told me he couldn't get executions on the whole model on Monday. Couldn't get them. Nothing. Put the orders in, the automatic firm trading system came back with nothing. So, and the reason was there were so many people selling all of those models all at the same time. So when you see that, that is a liquidity issue, not necessarily a problem with the ETF structure. To me, I look to use that. When I saw the Monday morning open, I thought to myself, well, let's put some orders in down 30% or 40%. See if we can get some executed. There's an apocryphal story during the crash of 89 where RCA Radio, which was one of the big companies back then, was trading at 200, and a floor trader put in an order to buy 1,000 shares at $4 and got it because he was the only bid trying to buy market orders to sell. And, you know, that sort of thing can still happen in this environment, especially when you look at the fact that a lot of this trading is being done by computer. The cheap costs of trading have gotten rid of some of the people. And so let's see how that works. But I think we should have a discussion on that, you know, over the next few weeks going forward. Certainly people should think about that, and maybe we'll discuss that on the call. The other question we've had is on derivatives. One of our clients was kind enough to send something in on derivatives and how the banks have a lot more derivatives and how relatively little, you know, effect on stability could have some big effect on some of these derivatives. I wish I could answer that question. That is not a technical question. That, to me, is a fundamental question. You know, yes, it could be a problem as it was in, you know, the 2007 to 2009 thing, but it's not a technical question. I can't answer it. I will call that client back personally and discuss it, and I'll be glad to supply some of the links that were given that show this if anyone's interested. My feeling really, though, is the next financial crisis is going to be different than the last one. It's probably not going to be derivatives-based. Want to talk briefly about bonds here. To me, the biggest fundamental is still the U.S. economy is improving, rates are going to go up, and bonds are going to go down. TLT has violated areas consistent with a decline in bonds. The next big area would be, for me, say 122 to 121. If we break 121 on TLT, it's back to 116. I don't see any reason intuitively why bonds should not go back to where they were before QE started. I would also mention we saw some things on QE4 coming out and this and that and the other. You know, I think it's safe to say that if we really think about it, the Fed's goal is not to support stock prices. The Fed's goal is to improve the economy. If the economy is getting better, they're not going to do anything. And frankly, I myself would not believe them if they did. So I think QE for me is off the table. Interest rates are going to go up, which means financials are our favorite sector. One of the questions we were asked, by the way, is how can you tell when leadership is changing and you're going to get a different sector? And to me, the answer is a combination of fundamentals, and you do have to see relative strength going forward. We think that sector is going to be financials as the best sector. What else on bonds? There was some news that China is selling. In my view, on a trading basis, it's smart for China to sell every bond they have. They'll get some nice gains. Unfortunately for China, they're our partners. They can't do that. But there's no way to know if that's happening. In terms of the commodities, we're seeing oil start to resolve. the oversold condition that it's had and rallied back up. This is as we thought could occur, although later this market still looks a little bit weaker. DBC, which we talked about at 15 as a buy, 15.5 actually, is starting to rally, but it's still in bad shape. And gold is acting as it did after the crash of 87. My question is, can GLD on this pullback hold the 106 area? If it does, it can turn and start to rally. Technical signals on gold are still reasonably attractive, and we know gold stocks obviously have come back down to the lows and are trading way out of line with gold. And I prefer to see gold actually trade better than stocks. Long term, that's bullish for the metals. In terms of the international stuff, you know, people saw we bought GXC and China a few days ago at what so far has been the bottom of this thing. We would trade GXC up to 76 to 78 and sell it. That's probably what we're going to do. And average positions, if you have them. We're not wild about China, but I think that that trade is going to work. We would much rather still be in EWL, which is basically holding 30 area support quite well, and is still our favorite long-term market. We want to see the commodity situation and stuff start to improve on emerging markets. Again, EEM, you know, obviously violated a bunch of support areas, as did everything else. And that also leads to a question, how do you look at, by the way, these super spiky charts that you get? The answer is there's all sorts of different ways to do it. You don't really want to pick any one way and say that's the way to do it. I usually look at close-only charts and see if the closes violate support or not. At least in this instance, that's what I've been doing. And with that, my preliminary comments are over. We're going to probably have some interesting comments and questions. Jeff, I want to put you on and see if you've got any questions. Love to hear from you about what's happened with short positions over the last few days, if you have any data as well.
Hey, Fred, how are you?
Fine, Jeff. How are you doing?
Good. So let's start off with short interest. So we got short interest data through the middle of August. There's always like a two-week lag to it.
Right.
On Tuesday night, and then we were out with the data yesterday. So the first thing I always like to look at is how did the market do? So the S&P fell by 44 basis points. The key is going to be the next data that we get, because that's going to reflect through yesterday's close, which by the way, is just awesome, because that means that we're going to be able to see, you know, did yesterday's move cause the shorts to really cover? Or, I mean, if we see that, I mean, I expect to see the number go up because it was such a bad period and people are putting, you know, shorts on. But the bigger issue is did shorts, you know, not go up as much because people took down exposure? There's always, for the market going down, that's bad. People add to shorts. But the question is, if people took down exposure, it's going to be really interesting to see the next. I think the next numbers are going to be key. And, you know, we've been working, we hit the peak last October, and then we hit kind of the low at the beginning of the year, and we've been adding back, and now we're kind of at, like, starting to get to a higher level on short interest. So the net is that, you know, the New York Stock Exchange went up by 1.9%, and NASDAQ went up by 1.39%. A bit misleading because New York had more decliners still than advancers, and NASDAQ had many more advancers than decliners. And typically, NASDAQ will, over time, people tend to be more aggressive in shorting NASDAQ stocks than they are in shorting New York Stock Exchange stocks.
Right.
So that's kind of the update on short interest. One thing that I would throw out there, and I'd be interested to see what you're saying as well, obviously short interest is one sentiment indicator. The other thing that that we look at, you know, within Phil stuff, he does some unique things on options. And we're now up to 11 sectors out of 24 with how we define excess put activity, which is getting there. I mean, we hit at the October low like 17 sectors, but once you're above 10, you're definitely in an outlier situation. So are you seeing on your put call stuff, have you looked at it intra-week? How does that look to you? Are you seeing the same type of excesses?
I wouldn't say excesses, and my real numbers come in for my put call on Friday. By the way, people, we're going to do the monthly this weekend, although it's not quite the end of the month. There are the data that we'll get for the weekend, which is very close to the end of the month, is enough so that we feel we should do the monthly this week rather than wait till after Labor Day. And that's a number that'll come up and that I'll write about. I am seeing a little bit more excess put activity in the numbers that I look at, but the real numbers I look at are weekly numbers. So
Okay, so here's my next question for you. How, as a technician, do we deal with Monday's action? Because, as an example, you know, I heard someone make the analogy, and I think it's a great analogy, that we didn't have one flash crash. We had 1,200 flash crashes that occurred. You know, when you look at charts like, Ford, that opened at $10.44, and then basically, you know, the high was $13.48 and it closed at $13.19, that was just bogus. I mean, I've talked to multiple big hedge fund clients of mine that have said that they tried to get, you know, stuff executed on the open down at those levels and didn't come anywhere close to it. So obviously that impacts a lot of technical indicators that look at the range of the day. Now, stuff that's just day-to-day closed, that may not have as much of an impact, but it could potentially really screw up, you know, technical indicators. So how are we supposed to deal with, you know, Monday's action?
Well, I mean, you know, I look at it first of all and say use a combination of close-only indicators and range-based indicators, okay? The fact is Ford broke down close-only as well, okay?
What
Ford
do you mean by close
is also close-only? In other words, from the Ford's close at 13, forgetting about the 1080 is still a big break of the 14 area, 1440 support. Okay? So this is a negative chart.
Yep.
Whereas something like, let's say, Bank of America, it did gap down, but it basically held the trading range at 15 to 1480. Close only actually did better. So I will use close only stuff on that. Okay. The real issue to me is you go and you look at some of the firm models on these things, especially in some of the dividend stocks like Verizon. They were in a lot of the income portfolios that people tried to sell en masse on the open. Right?
Right.
It reminds me, and again, I keep going back to the crash of 87, which I lived through and which was an interesting time. And I remember one of my favorite quotes from that was an article, which I think I've even kept somewhere, where someone was talking about the Morgan Stanley portfolio insurance computer that was in their office during the crash of 87. And the way portfolio insurance worked at that time was, as the market went down, people sold stock index futures to hedge, which actually made other computers sell stocks to try to bring the futures back into balance, so they sort of chase each other down. And what the guy said about his computer was, the damn thing kept sending off sell orders. We tried to get it to stop, but we couldn't. Finally, we had to unplug it. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, the liquidity issue is always going to be there, Jeff. And I am, you know, I have to look and see how things go forward to see how we deal with some of these charts, okay? I do think that New York and everybody is right not to scrub trades, okay? I think those trades should stand. The people with huge losses that sold things at the market deserve to have them. And I think the New York Stock Exchange correctly is saying that if you act a certain way, we're not going to bail you out, okay? If they complain, they complain. That's fine. You know, if these trades on charts actually never traded, the charts themselves, the exchange will send out data and be corrected as they comb through their records, right?
Yep.
But, you know, the bigger question to me, Jeff, is, if everybody is doing the same thing at the same time, it's an opportunity for our subscribers to go against that, and people ought to be thinking with that mindset. You know, the real risk to me is similar to the Morgan Stanley portfolio insurance computer that we were just talking about. There's a number of systems at our big firm clients that actually trade the client accounts. The advisors don't trade them. The computers trade them when changes are made by someone else other than the advisor. Okay. Now, obviously, not everyone is in that, but I think all of the people on the call should take a look at that issue. And I have a funny feeling, Jeff, like we said on Monday together, you and I, the firms themselves are probably going to take a look at this issue. They should, because this is one of the surprises of this correction, is that some of these things blew up in a spectacular fashion as they did, even for a few minutes. Because what if you have a real decline that lasts for longer than a day? Right.
Well, they shouldn't be surprised.
Those are all questions you don't know the answers to.
Yeah, this is just a replay of the flash crash. Let's move on. Next question for you is, so right now on Spire trading at 197.23. Let's say today we close at 198.5 and we never look back. What was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? Just like a bad dream? Because your first level was 198. If we get back above 198, are you more bullish as long as we stay above that level?
I'm expecting the Spider to move immediately to 204.
Okay.
And then retest. That's the risk. If I were long, which I am a little bit, and we got to 204, I would liquidate every single thing I had. And see if the market comes back. If it doesn't, you know, you put it all back on again. But as a trader, we've got numbers at 204 that should be hit, and then we start a retest.
So I heard an interesting discussion 2 days ago, and the guy I think besides you has been probably one of the best strategists out there because he's remained bullish throughout the last couple of years, Thomas Lee, who used to be J.P. Morgan. And he did a very interesting study that went back and looked at corrections of 10% or more, and found that you typically go down about 3% or another 3%, so you're down 13. There's a big caveat to his study, which is if you don't go into a bear market.
Right.
And what he found, which I thought was very interesting, is that 90% of the time you have a V bottom off of a 10% or more correction historically. And this is him going back to 1928 and bringing it forward. And he found that, like, 90% of the time, it's a V bottom. So that being the case, I'm leading into my next question for you. Monday, we had a really wide range. We closed at the low of it. Tuesday, we had a very wide range as well, but it was within the context of Monday's range. And we obviously closed at a lower level on Tuesday. Yesterday, we were even a narrower range than we were on Tuesday, but we closed up very nicely. And today, we're actually breaking out of yesterday's range, and the potential is that we're gonna close above Monday's range and high. And does that not are those not potentially conditions that create another V bottom?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, as a trader, Jeff, we've moved above the high of the inside day, which means it's over. There is no more correction possible. Unless we take out the low unless we go back to 186.
Yep.
Right. The problem I have with that is we won't know for sure until my Fred's Price Oscillator, which has moved back to dead even from being oversold in that minus 20 area, gets overbought and gives another selling indication.
Okay.
And the momentum down on the Fred's Price Oscillator has given us an 80% chance of a retest and a divergence bottom, i.e. exceeding the closing lows that we've made.
Okay. So next question for you is, can you just clarify for people, you said sentiment went from 18 to 22 to then we needed to go to 30. sentiment of what? Can you specifically
state? The Investors Intelligence percent bears numbers have been below 20 on my sentiment indicator for a year or so.
And when did they do their last? When did they do their last survey?
Last Wednesday. We just got the numbers yesterday.
Okay, so we're going to have to wait till next Wednesday to really get a reflection of what's happened in the last week.
That is more or less correct, because they've been doing the survey Monday and Tuesday.
So they have the numbers, but they don't release them until next week on that. Okay. Okay.
No, they released them on Wednesday.
Right. But you're
saying the survey is done Tuesday.
Did they release it on Wednesday? They haven't released it for this week, though, have they?
Yes, they have. It's only 22.
So you're saying Monday and Tuesday's action only took the percentage bearishness to 22?
Yeah. The amount of corrections went way up, but the amount of full-fledged bears did not.
What did the correction number go to? Do you know?
I have it somewhere, but I never look at it.
I mean, was it a big number, and is it reliable?
Yeah, it was a big increase. The percent bulls fell the most it's fallen in 2 years.
How about in relation to historical averages? How much has it fallen?
Huge amount.
Is it a big outlier? Like, you know, what we just got? Is it one of the biggest outliers we've ever seen?
No.
Okay, that's important.
No. And the other thing to mention is the people. I've always viewed people that are expecting a correction are not sellers. People that are bears are sellers.
Got it.
Okay. And to put those numbers in context, we look for, again, without giving away the indicator, which I have pledged to various people I wouldn't give away, we need 20 weeks of this, above 20, and ideally above 27. These numbers that we've had over the last year have really only occurred a few times in history. And generally, you've had very bad market action that's taken some time to fix those numbers. One instance was 72 to 74. The sentiment went to 68% bears. One was the crash of 87, and by the end of the whole pattern, which was in December, the numbers were in the high 40s. Right? No way to know if that's going to happen again, but what it does say is sentiment is not as spooked as it has been at major lows. Now, if this is a bull market correction and a V-bottom, it's not going to do that, but we should get the number up into the mid-20s over the next few weeks, and that we'll have to see. And my guess is, Jeff, what's going to happen is, even if the market rallies here, those numbers are going to keep going up for a few weeks, so that would be fine.
Okay. Last question for you. TLT never really breached 2% on a yield basis during this whole thing, and I heard a lot of people on last Friday and even into Monday saying that they thought that that we would go on a yield basis on the equivalent of TLT down to about 1.67. So was that a tell that maybe this thing wasn't as big of a deal as maybe it's being made out to be because, bonds didn't go that way?
Yeah. Although bonds and stocks can and time have moved together versus moved separately. But, Jeff, I think the big fundamental, and we saw it with the economic data today, is regardless of what the stock market is doing, the economy's getting better and rates are going up.
Yeah,
I mean, weren't the economic numbers much better today and say the economy's improving?
Yeah, we're still though, the first half numbers annualized were 1.5, and with this revision of GDP, maybe you're going to push it to 2, so we're still only doing like a 2 number. And if anyone has a subscription to the Wall Street Journal, they should go back and read last Saturday's editorial, because it's called A Fine Fed Mess, and it looks at the Fed's forecasting abilities since 2000 forward, and they're typically off by like one full percentage basis. So if they're predicting 3% growth we actually end up with 2% growth. So the question is, do you raise when, you know, rates are only at 2%? So, I mean, clearly there's a lot of and someone had a great line, Fred, as it relates to the Fed and to what you're actually going to, which is the crux of the matter. Probably, you know, the most important of the four issues. I mean, look, there's four issues that are basically influencing the market. The first is China. The second is currency. The third is the Fed, and the fourth are commodities. And the Fed is probably the most important of all those because it impacts some of those other ones as well. And I like the line that someone said that the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, it's now the Federal Market Open Mouth Committee, because you got so many people with divergent views coming out and saying opposite things that's what's causing part of the volatility as well.
That could be. I mean, again, one of the other questions we have is, you know, remember back in the 80s when or 90s when the business cycle had been repealed, there was an article in Business Week saying the business cycle had been repealed, right? We're not going to have a recession ever again.
Yeah.
I'm dying to see what happens during the next recession with interest rates here if the Fed has to do something.
Well,
right.
I mean, someone made the comment this morning that, you know, so we're basically going to take interest rates up again so that when we have the next recession, we can take them back down again.
it's the stupidest thing.
It's idiotic, but it is what it is.
Well, and the other thing is this, and this to me, of all the really stupid things I've heard, let me just throw this one out. We're worried about deflation in commodities and debt unwinding. So we're going to buy bonds to defend against that.
Yeah.
Right? What are bonds? They are debt. Okay.
So last question kind of related to this is, do you pay attention at all to the TED spread?
No.
Okay. The TED spread is the difference between the interbank loans and short-term U.S. debt. And what's interesting is we're only at 27.44 now. We peaked at like roughly 32 on Monday. And if we looked in 2011, when we got to the end of 2011, it got up to about 61 or so. And if you look in 07, we got it to 200. And if you looked in 08, we actually got it to 300. So right now, this is kind of saying that like there really isn't a crisis, kind of what related to what I said about, you know, treasuries. Like, the Treasury market wasn't freaking out on Monday at all.
Yeah. And, you know, the safest thing I think people can do on the call for clients is you have to trade these markets on their own merits technically without looking at the intermarket relationships right now. If you get a buy signal on stocks and you want to take it, fine. But don't worry about what bonds are saying, because these markets are starting to move, you know, sort of against each other, right? You look at what TLT did, it gapped up into resistance, it sold right back down to support, okay? You know, you can trade bonds without looking at anything else here. And stocks are obeying, I mean, I hate to say they're obeying normal rules, but they are. They're doing what they should do. The stochastic has turned up from 20. The market is trying to advance on the daily.
Okay, with that, I'll turn it back to you for Q&A so we can get to Q&A, because I'm sure we got a lot of questions.
Yeah, questions. Hit star 6 to unmute your phones, and we'll take some questions. Sorry about that. We've gone on too long.
Fred, this is Bob Sauer. Do you have a second?
Yes, Bob.
On ERY, you know, obviously with the oil stocks rallying here, would you begin to accumulate that or just stand aside? That's on ERY.
ERY. Let me check one thing, because my inclination is to say stand aside a little while longer and look on ERY for a price of 27.80. to start to get it.
Okay, Fred, thanks.
Yeah, that would be a good place to get that.
Okay.
Fred.
The first guy that spoke.
Fred, thanks. It's Steve.
Hey, how are you?
But great.
Hey, Steve.
I have a question for Jeff, if that's okay.
Sure.
I wanted to see if what he, if I heard what he said correctly. His comment was that 90% of the time we have a V bottom, and then there's two other possibilities, which would be a retest would be one possibility, and the second would be, you know, continuing on into a further bear market, which would mean that remaining 10% would get divided between those two possibilities.
Yeah, so,
is that correct?
So what I was, and I would tell everyone that they should, you just go to CNBC and you hit videos and you put in Thomas Lee, and I'm sure you can watch that whole interview. What he did a study of was going back to 1928 and looking at all corrections of 10% or more, not bear markets, okay? And so what he found was that typically once you're down 10%, you go down another 3%, and then you're done. And that when you're in a correction mode as opposed to a bear market, 90% of the time it ends up being a V bottom. So that was specifically what he said. Now he also said one other thing in there, which we hit in this latest downturn, which is when you have 3 days in a row that collectively lose 9%, which we have had, on average you rally back up 7%. You get a 7% rally. I mean, and we've actually already had that from an intraday basis, you know, through this time period. But he found that you get a rally of like 7%. So kind of interesting.
Okay, Thomas Lee, is that right? L-E-E?
Yeah, Thomas Lee. Fund Strat is the name of his firm. He used to be the strategist at J.P. Morgan. And I have a good buddy of mine who's his financial principal. So I've kind of always paid. I'd say, along with Fred, he's been probably the best strategist in the last several years in terms of calling the market, the direction of the market.
Great. Thanks a lot. And Fred, thanks for all your Fred alerts. They've been very helpful.
Steve, no, thank you for thanking me, and this has been obviously a difficult time, but we've tried.
It's been great.
Hey, Fred, Kip.
Yes, Kip.
Let me preface this with oil up almost 6% today. Transports are outperforming for some reason, but small caps are underperforming the market. Is there a level or number that will invalidate the Dow theory sell signal? I mean, do you?
Yes, both the Dow and the transports have to make new all-time highs, basically.
All right.
And again, for those who, I don't use Dow theory. A lot of people do. Dow theory is the oldest form of technical analysis in terms of forecasting. It was designed when ticker tapes and telegraphs were around, and it basically is an intermediate term to long-term indicator.
Okay.
The thing with this market has been, though, steadfastly, if you look at what, and the reason I'm telling people, and again, Kip, we'll be quick and then we'll take a couple more questions. You know, a lot of my clients, our clients, your clients, Kip, clients of the people on the phone here, are more concerned with protecting against the downside than capturing all of the upside. And a lot of those clients also are invested in stocks and maybe have raised some cash but still have substantial stock positions. When you see a situation where the transports go down for a good period of time before the market goes down, and you see the amount of new lows versus new highs that you have, the risk of having a bear market rather than a correction goes up. That's what you see in front of bear markets. That's indeed what you've seen in front of almost every bear market. Didn't see it in 2007, 2009, but that was actually a one-event bear market to us, like the first Persian Gulf War was. When you see that, it says to be a little more cautious. Trade if you want to, but realize that if you're trying to be cautious for people, those are the things you see during bear markets, not bull. That will hopefully start to change around, but we need a little more time to see that.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Fred. Hey, it's John Dunwoody.
John and Dunwoody, how are you?
I'm good. Looking forward to lunch on Tuesday.
Yes.
Quick, looking at the correction camp number, it was 45 that was put out last night on there
right,
for you.
Okay. Yeah.
You had thrown out kind of as a throwaway comment, I don't know, about maybe 2-3 weeks ago, that you said, and I'm trying to remember exact words, was to kind of put a fine point on it. 14.3, I think, is going to be the correction number. And if I get that right, you guys owe me a steak dinner.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you look, I mean,
the exact number that I would look at, pretty much. I was looking at 14.38, and it was 14.67.
Yeah. And, I mean, yeah, so, I mean, in the NYA, we pretty much hit that. So, I mean, is that – so you're saying you think we're going to come back up, retest 204, go back and retest that again?
Yeah, I think we could. I think that's the risk.
Mm-hmm.
I myself would give that a very high probability of occurring, and actually, if there's a mistake in that analysis, it's that we won't go to 204.
Okay.
We'll just go down first.
Okay. Perfect. Thanks. We'll see you on Tuesday.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. Finish your comment. I'm sorry.
Right. No, and the reason is, you know, when you look at a sell signal versus a buy signal, the fact is all sell signals look the same and all buy signals look the same on momentum indicators. But sometimes you get selling like we just had, and sometimes the market goes down 2%. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
From looking at the actual signal, there's really no way to say, well, this one's going to be 2% and this one's going to be 50, right? It has to do with some other things like the internals and such. However, when you see the market switch over to, golly, it's acting worse on sell signals than it is on buy signals, you need to see that turn around by starting to act better on some buy signals. That's all. And again, yeah, we're looking at our clients as if they're more concerned with protecting on the downside than they are capturing all of the upside.
Okay, perfect.
And that, and just to me, is the key.
And to clarify what you were saying earlier, the 22 number we got on the percent bears, that was actually last Monday and Tuesday's reading. So what we'll see next Wednesday will be this Monday and Tuesday's reading. Is that correct?
That I'm not 100% sure, but I believe it has some of this Monday. Yeah, exactly. We'll say it's that way, so we'll see it.
Yeah, so next week we'll actually see what the damage has been done to the psyche
from
Monday and Tuesday.
For this week. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Now realize, okay, we need to get that to get a sentiment buy signal into the 27-28 area for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And if it gets really bad, it can get into the 40s or 50s.
Right. Which is where we were in 2011.
Actually, yeah, but no, we weren't there in the – no, we weren't there at all. We were there, you know, God, 2011 wasn't anywhere near 50.
Okay. Well, I think that 30s, 40s is, I think, is – yeah.
Yeah, we had only one week where the bears were greater than the bulls.
Mm-hmm.
At the bottom of bear markets, you have 10, 20, 30 weeks of that.
Okay.
Right. So if the and again, we don't know if this is going to be a real bear market or not. And again, we define a bear market as down. And again, these people that say 20% is a bear market, I think are idiots. The average bear market takes 37% off stock prices last 8 months. So, you know, we have to see if we're going to do something like that. And if we do that, the sentiment numbers should get up into the 50s and 60s.
Okay.
I don't think that's going to happen, but that's where those numbers would go.
Hey, Fred, it's Paul.
Paul.
Quick question.
Sure.
Yeah, on Friday, we took out a minor placeholder position in MDY as a tax loss. If we didn't want to wait the 30 days, would you, given that it's not a core position for us, would you look at either IJH or would you look at maybe SCHM?
I'd look at IJH. They trade about the same.
I didn't figure there'd be much difference, but...
No. That's the one that I would actually look at.
And would you look at that basic on volume and a little more liquidity there, maybe, given our opening comments?
Yeah, but I mean, this still, the volume and liquidity didn't help this coming down at all.
Yeah.
Right. The question really is this thing in a lot of the firm models, and when those firm models blow up, will, you know, will they open up down 50-60% and not go up?
Well, it's one reason I looked at the Schwab mid-cap offering, just to kind of get something off the...
Yeah, something like Schwab, something that is not used by the big firms may be better, but IJH generally trades well.
Very good. Thank you.
Sure.
Hey, Fred, it's Rob.
Rob, how are you?
I'm fine. How you doing, Fred?
Good.
You know, I was watching over the last few days on the five-minute chart on the S&P. They kept selling every rally, so it was making lower highs.
Right.
Finally, yesterday, it broke that at 194. But all that really did was fill that gap.
Yeah.
I don't remember it looking like that typically if it's a V bottom. Any comment on that?
That is probably true. We are seeing a lot of bear market style trading here. But again, Rob, I mean, everyone is really emotional now, right? I'm not as concerned with that, but I agree with you. What I want to see, honestly, is what we've seen over the last couple of days has moved the McClellan oscillator off of minus 350 and back into the minus hundreds. And my Fred's price oscillator, believe it or not, has gone from roughly minus 20, which is about as low as it ever gets, back to zero. If we close here today, it'll probably be just above zero. What I want to see is what happens when that gets overbought and the market turns down again.
Okay.
I can tell you, and again, we'll let more people ask questions, when that thing gets to the minus 20s to minus 23 area, it's almost never a V bottom.
Mm. Okay.
But, we just have to see how that works out. You know, you're different than a lot of my clients, Rob. You are a lot more aggressive. Most of my clients don't look at five-minute charts. I would venture to say you're the only one on the call that does.
Mm. Okay.
Right?
Well, I was looking at it only to see if they were selling each of the rallies.
Yeah. But, if you are going to be cautious here, you need to be, if you're more concerned with protecting against the downside, it's a question of a little bit of caution, and let's see especially what happens when we get overbought. Other questions, though, Rob? I want to get some more questions in if you can.
Yeah, just two stocks, BAC, Bank America, and Valero.
I love Bank of America.
Valero.
I think it can go back to 18. I think it's a huge buy. The only reason I didn't talk about it as being a big buy was the question on bank derivatives, because if something goes wrong there, obviously Bank of America will go to zero.
Okay, and then Valero.
And
yellow.
Valero, I got rid of all of those TSO and VLOs and bought the MLPs a couple of weeks ago. Valero is probably going to go sideways here. I don't particularly like these. To me... Mm-hmm. The very best oil stocks are Halliburton, Oxy, and maybe one of the MLPs.
Okay. Well, I'm not looking to buy any oils necessarily, but I have Valero in in one of my portfolios, and it's...
See if we can get Valero to... What I would do would be to look at Valero, see if we can get it to exactly 61.13 and sell it.
Got it. All right.
If it
Excellent.
Can
Thanks.
Get you 61.13, you might get 65 out of it. I would definitely sell it at 65 and switch to another one.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Thank you.
Other questions? Did I hear Yogesh in the background trying to ask a question?
Yeah. Hey, Fred. It's Don.
Don, how are you?
Okay. Hey, we've discussed an awful lot this morning, but I get the feeling that you think the odds-on bet here is that this thing is going to have some kind of a retest.
I would say yes. When we've had down moves of this magnitude, you have an 80% chance of having a retest.
Okay.
And let me mention one other thing, Don. You know, one of the hallmarks of a successful retest like we had last October is we don't have all the stocks that go down and make new lows like we did on the first drop, okay? So one of the things you're going to want to look at is certainly buying some good quality names in preparation for a retest, because those may not go down and make new lows on the second decline. And what I think I'll do, I'll talk to Jack about this. We have some charts of what happened in 2011 from a thing we did on the alert that we sent out in October of 2011. Those charts and that piece illustrate very well what things looked like on the retest, because we sent it out then talking about the retest. I'll talk to Jack. We may send that to everybody again, so you can see what we're looking at, the sort of thing that could happen. Don, sorry, you now ask your next question real quick.
Well, just the 198 level here, you know, we actually had three gaps going down in this move. And at 198, we fill the third gap. We got to go to 204 to fill that continuation gap. So the odds are actually a little greater that we quit at 198, aren't they?
They are, Don. What I'm looking at is the strength of my Fred's price oscillator, which will become overbought again if we get to 204. Okay?
Okay.
Right now it's not overbought, it's even. If we turn down from here and retest, that would actually look worse, because the oscillator only managed to make it back to even before we went down again.
Oh, okay.
Right. So I'm hoping for 204, because that would be a sign of strength, even if we then pull back again.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Surely. Other questions?
Fred, if you were thinking about a swap, taking one thing out of your model and putting something else in, how do you time that in this environment?
Michael, I'm afraid I think you just have to go do it. The things are flying around so much. You can either, the problem is the individual technicals on, say, Bank of America and BB&T both look identical and identically bad when you want to do the swap. The only way to do it would be to hold cash for a couple of days and try to do the swap, and then it's a gamble. Michael, I think, especially you, you've got good fundamental ideas. I just go ahead and do what you're going to do, if it's what you want to do, and if it's doo-doo, it won't work. Sorry. But, yeah,
thanks,
just, I mean, timing this, guys, timing this without using five-minute charts and having 10-minute intervals mean a whole lot in terms of percents. Is very, very difficult. I just go ahead and be calm and do whatever it is you're going to do without reference, especially now. Normally what happens is what I call the wubba wubba phase, where the market has been extremely volatile and then ends up being less volatile and goes back to normal, like throwing a beach ball out a window. It bounces, it rolls. We're probably in the beginning to roll phase now. Other questions?
Hey, Fred, this is John Sard.
John, how are you?
Hey, I'm okay, thanks. Dorsey Wright wrote an article yesterday about pricing ETFs and getting an intrinsic net asset value. So on days like Monday, where it's just kind of all over the place, and I don't know if this is a question you can answer, we do not subscribe to Thomson or Bloomberg, where apparently you can get these quotes. Do you have any ideas or suggestions as to where we can get an intrinsic NAV quote for ETFs?
You know, that's a really good question that I can't answer, because most of my subscribers subscribe to those things, but I will contact someone at PowerShares and I will ask them that question. I'm sure they know the answer. I don't know.
Okay.
It.
Cool. Good enough.
And I will publish that answer. Jonathan, if that's not in the weekly on Monday, I've made a note, feel free to call me and bitch me out or send me an email saying, you bugger, you forgot to do that, and I'll get it for the midweek.
Will do. I prefer to call you and bitch you out, so I'll do that instead.
That's fine. Yeah, and yeah, exactly.
All right. Sounds good. Appreciate it.
No, fine. That's a great question. I will try to find an answer to it.
Okay, cool.
Other questions? I have, obviously, guys, this has been tough. I've tried to get to every question that's come in. I've tried to write something about questions if there's been a huge amount of questions on the same thing. I've tried to put that in an alert. If there are any questions that anyone has about what's going on that I can try to answer, you know, feel free to send me a quick note, and I'll try to mention that. We'll see what we can see. Any other questions? Otherwise, we will end the call. Going once, going twice. Very well. This should end, or does in fact end, the Fed Report Technical Market Call for August. Sorry, I can't see my computer. August 27th, 2015. Everybody have a good weekend and relax.